Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 17 of Movie on Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action movie Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Alex Robinson of the Star Wars Minute. Welcome back, Alex.
Hello there. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad. I hope that yesterday's episode, you know, made you a little intrigued as to what is going on in Die Hard, and I'm glad to see that you're back for another day to see, you know, what happens to these characters who are doing things completely different than what you thought there would be in an action movie.
Yeah, this minute certainly continues the trend. It's very tempting to watch the rest of the movie, but I must insist on keeping my moratorium in place for the sake of my own interestingness.
Well, we'll see how that goes by the end of the week. Maybe we'll be able to try to break through that little barrier. But who knows? You know, I know that the answer is I know your answer is going to be no. But you know, we could try. You know, I don't think there's any harm in trying. You know, especially to you know,
a chance.
There's always a chance. Wait, there's a chance of harming you, or there's a chance that you might change your mind.
Both.
Okay. Well, let's put it this way. We're on the opposite sides of the globe. I don't think I'm going to be able to hurt you.
All right.
Not even verbally.
Emotionally.
I wouldn't try. Emotionally. Okay. Well, let's hope not. You know, I want us to still remain friends after this week, Alex. Come on. Or acquaintances. How's that?
Colleagues.
Okay. That's fine too. That's fair. So, Minute 17 begins with John and Holly continuing to bicker and ends with the Pacific Courier truck turning a corner and coming straight at the screen. So
dramatic.
Yeah, seriously. Too bad this wasn't a 3D movie. You know, that one shot just looks like a 3D, but we'll get there at the end of the minute. So yesterday's minute ended with John and Holly bickering and complaining about the fact that, you know, she's got a fake reason of why she's using her maiden name. And, you know, John just thinks that she's doing it in order to take all of his hard-earned New York City police detective, you know, salary. Who knows?
That's sweet $55,000 he's making.
There you go. If he's lucky. So yesterday we did a little bit of research. I did a little bit of research about the fact that, you know, what John's salary is. And, you know, it's very difficult to try to figure out what Holly's salary should be. But my assumption is that if he was making $50,000 as a detective, she's making at least $100,000. Hmm. Because she's supposed to be the number two or number three person in this company.
And it's a Japanese company, and this was at a time when Japanese companies were very it was a very big time for Japanese business. So it's probably a good, safe assumption.
Yeah, exactly. So then their argument gets a little more heated, and Holly goes, "Are we going to have this conversation again? We did this in July," which, you know, we established 2 weeks ago when he was in his limo ride to the office, the fact that, you know, it's been 6 months since she came from New York to LA. So obviously now we know it's July, you know. And then the response is, "We never finished this conversation in July. I had an opportunity. I had to take it." So, I mean, they leave things a little ambiguous here about, you know, how this whole thing worked. You know, the fact that she's able to be so high up in this company means that she must have had a pretty good job in New York also. You know, whether she was working for Nakatomi or she was working for some other company, it doesn't really make a difference. You know, it sounds as if she was a housewife and, you know, applied on a whim for a top level executive position in a Japanese company. And wow, okay, we're going to take you and we're going to fly you across the country. She obviously has some credit to, you know, she must have had a pretty good resume before that.
She's been climbing the corporate ladder.
Exactly. Completely. So, you know, when she basically says, "I had an opportunity and I had to take it." So, you know, the question also is brought up. So why did she have to take it? Is it because that she and John were already starting to have fights? And she's like, here's something, you know, I have a great opportunity. I can get away from him for 6 months or however long it's going to take. Or is it that, okay, I've been given a great business opportunity. This is something that no one else has given me this chance beforehand. And, part of the deal is I got to move to California. It's left very ambiguous. There's no definitive answer on that one.
I wonder why that is from a movie making point of view. I mean, maybe they just don't want to get in. The details kind of aren't really important. This is just sort of a little backdrop story with which to frame the whole overall plot and stuff. It's
Okay, now
not really,
you
not
know
like
that
a
this.
really a relationship drama.
Correct. I mean, you know that this is based on a novel, right? Do you know that?
I did not know that.
Oh, okay. So it's based on a novel called Nothing Lasts Forever by Roderick Thorpe, which came out in the late 70s. It was actually a sequel to another novel that he wrote in the 60s called The Detective, which was made into a movie with Frank Sinatra. Okay, so it was a 1968 movie with Frank Sinatra where he played the detective. And when they made Die Hard, they had a big problem because part of Sinatra's clause in his contract for the detective was as if they ever make a sequel with the same character, he gets to play the character. Okay. So I don't really know. I think he must have been in his 70s at the time. Would have been a
Yeah, at
little
least,
different,
yeah.
John McClane. But in the novel, he's actually a retired police officer. He's in his 60s, and he's going to LA to visit his daughter, not his wife. So things are a little different with the way that thing plays out.
Did they buy Sinatra off? How did they get out of that?
No, they offered it to him, and he's like, "I can't do that."
Oh, okay. So he just turned it down. So.
I think he just turned it down. I think everyone knew,
Okay.
including Sinatra, that this isn't a vehicle for him in 1988.
So somewhere out there's this unknown Die Hard Zero is out there somewhere.
Well, it's not somewhere out there. It is out there. I mean, I've seen the movie.
But I mean,
I've seen the movie.
it's not like it's ever shown. It's not like I've ever seen it or yeah, not that I've
Well,
ever
you
seen
haven't
any
seen
of Die
Die
Hard,
Hard.
but
You haven't seen Die Hard.
I mean,
Why
it's
would you
not
see
like
Die Hard Zero?
I've never heard of this movie before, and I mean, it's never like, oh yeah, when Die Hard is played, you see it played with Die, you know what I mean?
Well, because it's not as good. It's not a Die Hard type of movie. It's about a detective who's trying to solve a murder. It's a typical procedural. That's what it comes down to. It was very innovative for its time because of the subject matter. I mean, it was talking about, I'm trying to remember the different things that they talked about. It talked about body mutilation, and it talked about, different types of seedy places in New York and things like that. And to think Frank Sinatra's in a place like in a movie like that was also, not something that you would think of.
So it's kind of like that Red Dragon movie they did with where Brian Cox was Hannibal Lecter.
No, that wasn't. Was that Red Dragon? Where?
That was Red Dragon or Mind Hunter.
Mindhunter, right. Mindhunter.
Right,
Was
but
it
it was
Mindhunter?
based on Red Dragon.
Right. I think was it. Yeah, I think it
In
was
any
based on
case,
Red Dragon.
someone else play, someone played
Yeah,
Brian
yeah, yeah,
Cox
yeah. No, I
played
remember. I
Hannibal
remember.
Lecter before. Yeah, so it's like that where Frank Sinatra played John McClane in a early version of
Version of it, yeah.
the same character.
I don't think it was called Mindhunter though. For some reason, I don't remember. That's what the internet's for. But do you know that Bruce Willis was like the 17th actor that they offered this role to?
I believe it. Like you said yesterday, it's he was doing moonlighting at the time, so I'm sure they offered it to the other big movie stars at the time,
Yeah, any
Stallone
guesses?
and Schwarzenegger and
There you go. So
the usual.
the person they really
I'm
wanted to
not
give
sure how
it
far
to.
down the line they went. Did they get to like Chuck Norris and Steven Seagal? And oh, actually, Steven Seagal probably wasn't even a thing yet, was he?
Steven Seagal was right at the beginning of his career at that point because Above the Law came out in like, I think, 86 or 87, something like that. So here's the quick list of people who were offered but all declined. All right, you have Sylvester Stallone, Harrison Ford, Mel Gibson, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Clint Eastwood, Robert De Niro, Charles Bronson, Don Johnson, Richard Dean Anderson, Burt Reynolds, Michael Madsen, and Richard Gere.
Yeah, those, none of those are really especially surprising. It makes sense that it would get passed around from person to person.
Yeah, exactly. And I wonder how many of them actually kick themselves afterwards and think, oh, I wish I would have been in this movie. But you can't even answer that.
Because, of course, if it was someone else, then like, if Charles Bronson was in it, then the movie night might not have been popular, you know?
Right.
It would have just been another you know, action movie. So
another Charles Bronson action movie. Yeah.
Yeah. They had to wait till Expendables so they could put all of them into one movie.
Right. Exactly.
All the actors who turned down Die Hard into one movie.
Correct. And then John's response to her after she said, I had to take it, was right. No matter what the consequences, no matter what it did to our marriage, you had to. And then she has a nice little quip, which is pretty brutally honest, where she goes, it didn't do anything except maybe change your idea of what our marriage should be. Now, do you have any idea what they're talking about here? What do you think they're trying to say about their what each of them think of the marriage?
Well, I'm going to guess that Bruce Willis is threatened by the fact that his wife would be earning twice as much money as he was. Because why didn't he want to move to L.A.? Is that ever?
He does mention it that he has an 18-month backlog of New York scumbag that he's trying to put away, and he can't just get up and move to L.A. That's his excuse.
Yeah, because there's no scumbags in L.A. If no one catches those New York scumbags, then like, oh, if he catches that last remaining batch of scumbags, then New York will be safe, and then he can. Like, that seems like a lame excuse.
Yeah, for sure it
is. A bit of a.
It is.
I think he's a bit of threatened by the fact that she's earning more money than he would be, and so on. And
right, but based on the based on the logic that we mentioned earlier, you know, she must have had a nice paying job beforehand, also.
Right, but I guess now it's like now you have to give up your job to come move somewhere else, whereas before he could kind of, at least he was still working at the same job, so right. It wasn't, you know, now it's like, you know, cards are on the table, like you,
right
now you really have to move out if your wife is going to pursue her own career.
Yeah for sure.
Yeah, this does seem like something that should have been brought up, or maybe I guess it just never came, you know, he never thought she would get the job in LA and take it.
No, but maybe he didn't think. No,
17 remaining scumbags.
Right, exactly. I mean, he mentions it earlier. No, not seven. He said 18 months of scumbags. 18 month backlog.
Months of scumbags.
Yeah, not 17. I wonder how not many that 17 is. Scumbags.
I wonder how many scumbags that is, though.
I don't know. I mean, we went through a whole list that week of what the word scumbag means. So you can go back and listen to that to hear all the. Okay. We opened a thesaurus and we got like 30 different. Okay. You know, versions of what scumbag means. Right. So we're not going to rehash that one. But
yeah.
So, I mean, it's interesting that it seems basically that they're just trying to find an excuse to have the two of them argue here. I mean, most of their arguments don't hold much water with the way that they,
yeah, it's, again, like, it's not really meant to be the, no one really cares. No one.
Exactly.
You just want to see stuff get blown up and people fighting, you know, no one really cares about the specifics of their,
completely, you know, completely. And then, you know, he says to her, I don't think you have a clue what my idea of our marriage should be. And she goes, I know exactly what your idea of our marriage should be. So again, it's back and forth saying the same thing, you know, trying to, you know, make things sound a lot more complicated than it really is. You know, I think it goes. I think you're 100% right with what you said. His version is that, okay, you know, I'm threatened by the fact that my wife is getting paid more. She's going to try and make me move across the country. I don't want to do that. I'm happy with what I'm doing. And, you know, let her go. Let her try things out. Hopefully it's not going to work out. And then she'll come back home. You know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, he mentions it to the limo driver. That's what he was hoping for, you know, that she's just going to, you know, that it wouldn't work out and she'd come back. That says a lot about their marriage, if that's the thing. Like, I mean, I don't know. It doesn't sound to me a very healthy marriage if you're hoping that your spouse fails in order for things to work better for you.
To me.
What?
And then she'll come back to me. Once she's totally, if she fails and is totally humiliated, then I'll get her back.
That's right. Completely. So I don't know. But the irony of this whole thing is that in the beginning of Die Hard 2, we find out that he's an LA cop. So he does end up moving to LA. So, but then Die Hard 3.
Get back with her though.
No, Oh, no, in Die Hard 2, yes. But Die Hard 3, he's back in New York.
Yeah, that I
So
remember.
he keeps jumping back and forth. Die Hard
Yeah.
4, he's still in New York, and Die Hard 5, he's geriatric. I don't remember. That's going to be a fun one to
Finally
do if
caught
I
that
ever
last
get to it.
scumbag.
Yeah, exactly. If Die Hard 5, he's in Russia. So whatever. He's trying to save his son in Russia, something like that. We'll hopefully eventually get to that. Who knows? And then, we actually hear a knock on the door, and then her secretary comes in. We met her secretary, Ginny, a few, I think about a week and a half ago. So, at least she has the courtesy to knock on the door. But then my question is how does she know where they are? If they, left, I mean, you didn't see this, obviously, but they left Holly's office and went apparently to Ellis's office, but they didn't say to anybody, we're going to Ellis's office. We're going to find a place to wash up. So somehow her secretary had a homing beacon and knew how to find her and knew to knock on
Maybe
the
she
door.
was opening every door. Hello, and she saw that couple making sweet love. She opened up another door, some other thing. So eventually
It's like, oh, I
she
finally
tracked him
found
down.
you.
Yeah.
It could be. And then she goes, Miss Gennaro, I excuse me. And then like she looks at John and he just smiles and says, hi. It makes it sound as if, she might recognize who he is. I mean, you'd think that if she's, Holly's secretary, she's seen the picture. Whether she thinks it's Holly's brother or, and that it's a niece and nephew in the picture, it doesn't really make a difference. But, she knows that this guy is in the picture. So
Yeah.
whoever he is, maybe she's, taken phone calls from him at some point or called him. I'm assuming they've had conversations over the course of the last 6 months, besides, right before when he decided he's coming to LA for Christmas. I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. Was this, did she did hire Jenny as soon as she moved to Cal? Was Jenny given to her by the company that she works for now? And it's possible they've never, yeah, the relationship between McLean and Jenny is vague and mysterious.
No, for sure. But when they look at each other, it looks as if there's some sort of recognition between the two of them. A fleeting bit of
Like,
recognition. Who knows?
this is that loser who's been calling and I've been having to deflect him from having to speak to his wife all
This is the guy she ran across the country away from.
the
Yeah.
time. Sure, she's heard all sorts of horror stories about what a jerk he is.
That brother of mine, made me take my niece and nephew and run across the country.
Yeah, he has problems.
Yeah, probably. And then she says, Mr. Takagi is looking for you. Now, Takagi, since you don't know this, is the head of the company who we met earlier. We met him last week. Mr. Takagi is looking for you. He wants you to say something to the troops. So, again, this once again shows that she is very high up. She's being offered the opportunity to go at this Christmas party and give a speech to all of their employees. So she's not
Yeah.
just a run-of-the-mill businesswoman here. She's very high up, with
Public
the whole
speaking
thing.
is involved.
Yep, exactly. And then she like shrinks away and leaves. She leaves the room, and Holly thanks her, and she's happy that she's got an out from this argument with John right now. And she goes, speech
Sure.
time, be back in a few minutes. And then she just gets out of there. The two of them, they've all reached a very uncomfortable situation. I think, yeah, no, she could feel the tension in the room, and obviously the two of them, are everyone is somewhat relieved that something has broken this tension. And that Holly now has to leave the room. And she just, leaves. And John then turns around and bangs his head 3 times against the board doorpost, which might have just been easier for him
It's
to say,
OCD kicking
seriously, or he could have just said Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. One of those things.
Careful. Yeah.
And he realizes that he probably shouldn't have started the argument. I think that guest room is getting smaller and smaller. based on the I can say I'm in a happy marriage, and if I get into a fight like that, I'm concerned. He's not in a happy marriage. If he's getting into a fight like that, things are going to be even worse for him.
Yeah, that's a tough hole to be in.
Yeah, exactly. And then he starts to deride himself a little bit, and he goes, "That's great, John. Good job. Very mature." And then he picks up a towel and begins to wipe his brow, which I guess, having this heated argument got him a little sweaty.
Did he show up for this discussion wearing his white tank top, or did he change into it during this conversation?
He took off his shirt. He
Okay.
it, beforehand he was wearing a shirt. He got into this office and he took off his shirt and he took off his shoes and he took off his socks. So
Why
he's
did he take off his
basically
shirt?
because he was basically giving himself a sponge bath from the sink.
Really? That's strange.
He was we saw him wiping his body with a towel. I guess, after being on a plane for 4 hours, he came directly from the airport. So it
Yeah.
must have, and come on, it's LA in December, so it must be boiling hot. So he was sweating and, couldn't take a
Yeah.
shower, so he's gonna, dab himself with the towel. I
Yeah, fair enough.
don't know. Who knows?
Changing into his iconic white tank top.
Apparently. Well, that's an important that's an integral part of this movie that he has
Oh
this
yeah,
white
totally.
tank top. The rumor is that they had 17 different versions of the tank top that he needed to use throughout the course of this movie
Yeah, I
because of
imagine.
the because it would get dirtier and dirtier and stuff like that, Yeah, last week we had a discussion about the slang term for that t-shirt. It's an A shirt, not a t-shirt. And it's known as a wife beater.
I've heard that term before.
Yes, and we actually went into the history of why it's called a wife beater. It's based on an incorrect assumption.
All right, I'll have to go back and listen to those
There you go.
episodes.
There's a teaser for anyone who's missed the last week's episodes with Alan Sanders that he and I had that conversation. So if I remember correctly, it was on Friday. But yeah, of course it was on Friday because that's when he started to started to pat
Reinvigorate.
himself down when he took off his shirt.
Yeah.
So there you go. So yeah. So anyone who's interested, you can go back to Friday's episode and hear what we have to say about that one.
Check it out.
Yep. And then we get a shot of the Pacific Courier truck driving down the street and comes right at us as the minute ends.
3D, as we said.
It does look 3D, doesn't it?
This really scared audiences back in 1989. People were jumping out of the way when the thing went right to the screen. But
Yeah, especially when they
people
were
are
wearing
more.
those paper 3D glasses,
Yeah.
that those of us who grew up in the 70s and 80s know a lot about.
Yeah.
We didn't have the cool plastic ones that they now have. Or actually, do they still make 3D movies? I remember,
Know what? I don't know.
I think the last movie I saw in 3D was Avatar, so that was like 2009. So I guess when the new Avatar comes out later this year, maybe I'll get to see that in 3D also. I was never a fan of
Yeah.
3D movies. Are you,
No,
did
I
you enjoy
avoided it
3D
whenever I
movies?
could. No, I avoided it whenever I could. Just looked murky and dark.
I never found it to be really 3D. Like I didn't feel that things were jumping out at me. You can see that things are jumping a little bit out of the screen, but not into my lap type of thing.
Yeah, it's not like I ever left a 3D movie being like, wow, I'm glad I saw that in 3D, except for really Avatar. Like, I've never seen a 3D movie where I'm like, boy, I'm glad I saw that in 3D instead of like nothing really. Very few effects do I remember being like, oh wow, look, that really, you really feel the 3D. So
I think part of
glad
the
that has died away for now.
yeah, I think part of the draw for 3D was just that they could get more money for each ticket.
Oh,
But
totally. Yeah.
whenever I had the choice of 3D or 2D, I always still go with 2D.
Yep.
I also stay away from the 4Ds. I don't like, you're sitting and watching a movie and water starts splashing on you and stuff like that.
Oh, one of those, like you sit in the chair and it's rocking around. Yeah.
I think I saw one movie like that. I can't even remember what it was. But I was like, okay, I don't need that. So, yeah. So, do you have anything else for this minute before we get into the script?
Well, I guess, is this the last time we see Bruce Willis for the week, I think, possibly?
I believe so. Yes.
I feel like the rest of the week we're mostly focusing on the bad guys.
Yes.
I just wanted to call
Wait, there are
attention
bad
to
guys in
the
this movie? I thought this movie was just about this couple, arguing about whether they should, where they should live, whether they should live in New York or LA. It's
I got
Die
exciting
Hard.
news for you.
I'm gonna die if I have to live in LA, or I'm gonna have to die if I have to go back to New York. I think that isn't that what this movie's all about?
Yeah, the choices we all face. I just wanted to call attention to the delightful shiny gold wallpaper lining this office, I guess this is. You said it's an
Yes.
office, not a, I assumed it was a hotel room, but it's
No,
an
it's an
office. I
office.
love the gold, shiny gold wallpaper. Very late 80s looking. So
Yeah, I mean
nice attention to detail there.
the emblem of Nakatomi is always in gold, so I guess that might be part of it.
Oh, the gold shiny
In the
wallpaper.
beginning of tomorrow's episode, we'll be able to briefly see the symbol. So
Yeah.
maybe maybe you'll get to check that out and see what the symbol looks like for the
I
Nakatomi.
think wallpaper's gone out of style. Do people use wallpaper as much anymore?
I don't think so. I think people prefer to paint or like
Yeah.
maybe put like fake bricks on their walls and stuff like that.
Yeah. I'm sure it'll come back.
Probably. It's all cyclical. Completely. Okay, so the script there again, the dialogue is it's they have an extended conversation here between John and Holly. So Holly says, "Didn't we have the same conversation in July? Damn it, John. There was an opportunity out there. I had to take it. No matter what it did to our marriage, my job and my title and my salary did nothing to our marriage except change your idea of what it should be." So you see, here she specifically is mentioning the things that are bothering John, her job, her title, and her salary.
Yeah.
And then his response is, "Oh, here it comes. One of those meaningful relationship conversations. I never should have let you get those magazine subscriptions." So
Wow.
I guess he's upset
Let her get them.
that exactly. And he's, what type of magazines is she reading that is he concerned about? Is this Good Housekeeping or is this like 17 or
Any news whatsoever, she is
No, it's not news. I believe he's talking here about women's magazines about
Oh yeah, no, but yeah.
being able to go out on your own, women's lib type of magazines, I guess he's referring to them. And then her response is, "You want to know my idea of a marriage? It's a partnership where people help each other over the rough spots, console each other when there's a down, and when there's an up, well, hell, a little goddamn applause or an attaboy wouldn't be too hard." And then she says, "I needed that, John. I deserved that."
Okay.
And yeah, that makes more sense.
She needed to be told attaboy
Yeah, that's
and
right. Uh,
applaud.
yeah, I'm sure she would have been really thrilled if John said to her, "Attaboy, attaboy, Holly.
Never
Good
should let her
job."
read those magazines.
Apparently, yeah, it's true. And then the description in the script says there's a clumsy pause as if she's almost challenging him to say something, but he sets his jaw, says nothing. Just then the door opens and Ginny leans inside. "Miss Gennaro, Mr. Takagi is looking for you. He wants you to say something to the troops." "Thanks, Ginny. I'll be a second. Oh, this is." And then McLean, mock bright, it says mock bright radio voice. "Hi, John Gennaro here. I'm the sensitive and supportive man of the 80s."
Weird.
Very weird. Ginny looks puzzled, goes out. Holly sighs, moves to the door. "I'll be a few minutes. Wait here. Don't I always?" She's gone. Immediately he slaps his forehead, contrite. McLean to himself, schmuck.
So it obviously did a bunch of changes in that one
Yeah, lots of changes in that
compared
one.
to what up out on the screen.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe it would have been. Most of this I would have completely cut out also, but I think the one thing I might have left in there is her little diatribe as to, what a real marriage partnership should be, because that is spot on, and that would have said so much more about these two characters if they would have let that in. But they didn't,
Yeah.
so that's it. I don't make the editing choices. John McTiernan did while he was checking wiretaps, so you never know.
Listening
Apparently,
in to what critics are saying, and he's like, maybe we
exactly.
should cut that scene out.
Maybe
So,
he's listening to us.
wiretap.
Who knows? Who knows? All right. So every Tuesday, we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Holiday Edition, where my guest will give a little story about an adventure or misadventure or something that they happened to them over the course of their lives related to some sort of holiday. So you have a story for us, Alex?
I do. And it's a Christmas story, which is appropriate since Die Hard is, as we all know, a Christmas movie.
Do you know
We I'd never
that?
seen it, but I've heard about it. This one probably would have been 2009, maybe to maybe the December of maybe Christmas of 2008. We had just gotten a pug, our first ever dog, and we loved him. His name was Wrigley. And we went to go visit my parents in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And my mom likes to make a bunch of cookies and things like that to bake for Christmas. And we took our eye off the pug for just a few minutes. And in that space of a few minutes, he went into the kitchen, climbed up on the kitchen table, and then proceeded to start eating a tray full of cookies from our Christmas table. And we busted them, and we were like, oh my gosh, we were worried because there was some chocolate on some of the cookies. And as your listeners probably know, chocolate is not good for dogs. In fact, it can actually kill them. So we were worried. Luckily, he made it through the night okay, and just seemed to have a bit of a tummy ache. And we know this because a lot of the cookies, they were different colors and stuff, you know, food coloring and whatnot. And when our dog pooped the next day, it was almost like a rainbow colored, you know, Play-Doh fuzzy pumper barbershop kind of effect. So it was a Christmas miracle that on Christmas morning he was pooping rainbow poop. So there you go. That's my Christmas, delightful Christmas story ending, culminating in a dog pooping rainbows.
That's really
Merry
cool.
Christmas.
Exactly. You woke up to
Thank
a
you.
nice little Christmas present. At least it wasn't in your stocking.
Yes, that would have been substantially worse. So thanks, Wrigley, for doing that.
Rainbow poop. That sounds interesting. I was going to say, I guess you should be happy that whoever baked the cookies, skimped on the chocolate.
Yeah,
They
exactly. Or at
didn't
least
put as much in
he
as you thought they would.
yeah, it wasn't real chocolate. It was some mock chocolate. But
Okay. Mock chocolate still gives you rainbow colored poop. So there you go. That worked. All right, great. Do you want to tell people once again how they can get in touch with you?
Well, I am the host of two podcasts. I host the Star Wars Minute podcast, and I am also host of the Godfather Minute podcast. That's where me and my brother go through the Godfather movies 1 minute at a time. We are currently waist deep into Godfather 2 as of this recording. We only do one episode a week, so it's taken us a long time to get through Godfather 1 and Godfather 2, but we hope you'll check it out by going to godfatherminute.com or find it wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher you might be using to listen to this show. And finding me is quite simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find my website. You can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Facebook. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay!